This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, wow. I'm just coming off of a really big high. We had, of course, BoucherCon 2018 here in St. Petersburg at the Vinoy Hotel. It was 4.5 days of absolute joy. And for me, it was so wonderful. I got to meet and I got to hug some really great authors. It's really special when you have a weekend of hugging Lee Child and Lawrence Block and Michael Connelly. I mean, you know, that's a pretty good weekend. So I did have lots of fun. And over the next few months, I will be having them all here on Joy on Paper. And, of course, some of them have already been on the program, Lee Child and Lawrence Block, Reed Farrell Coleman. And I am going to be posting all of their interviews on my webpage. So starting this weekend, please go to my webpage. It's radio-joyonpaper.com, of course, and you will be able to listen to some of my past interviews and see a schedule of upcoming interviews with all of the wonderful authors that I met there at BoucherCon. It was a great event, and I'm looking forward to that. Now, in a little while, I'm going to be talking to a very, very special guest who has come to the studio today, and I am so looking forward to talking to her. So I want to talk in a minute to her. Her name is Evelyn Mann, and she has written a book called Miracle in My Living Room, The Story of a Little Man. And it is a touching and beautiful story, and I will let her tell it. So I'm just going to go through a few things before I get to her, because I don't want to interrupt her once she starts telling this very touching story about a dedicated mother and father who have just created their own little miracle. So I'm so happy to welcome you here, Evelyn.
Thank you for having me, Patsy. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I just want so much to encourage people to listen to your story, to be touched by your devotion to your son and the wonderful work that you've done. So we'll get to that in a minute. I just want to cover a few things before I get to you, because once you start, I'll start crying, because it is such a beautiful story. I want to tell everybody, of course, all of you know, what did I say I would do if I got one more book with the title that has girl in it? I mean, how many books have I gotten this year alone, and let alone all the books before? And just when I said I would bang my head against the wall or hit myself over the head with a microphone, I'm getting two books. Rachel Hollis is the author of this year's best-selling motivational book, and it's called Girl, Wash Your Face. I don't know if you've read it yet, but I'm going to have her on. And then on top of that, she just got she sold 1 million of those, Girl, Wash Your Face. Now, I have to admit that it has worked. Putting girl in a title seems to guarantee, ever since Girl Gone, girl has seemed to guarantee a best-selling book. It's frightening, actually. And to think that for so many years, all of us women didn't want to be called girls. But then you get to a certain age, right, Evelyn?
Yes.
Then you don't mind if they call you girl. I mean, it was very sweet. Some of these, let's say, some of the older authors that I met during the convention would hug me and they'd say, "Oh, girl." They'd call me girl. And I'd say, "Okay, I go for it." You know, you get to a point where you don't mind. But anyway, I'm looking forward to talking to Rachel Hollis. And then if that wasn't enough, then there is a book called The Van Apfel Girls Are Gone. So they've combined girl gone in a title. I mean, there must be some algorithm There has to be an algorithm in Amazon, do you think?
I think so.
I think so. That says girl and gone are like two of the words that you have to put in your title. So I'm trying to think of girl gone crazy might be a good one for me because girl really overwhelmed with everything she has to do. I think I have a...
There's the title right there.
My goodness, I have a best-selling. All I need to do is get one of these agents who has been on my program, like Donald Moss. Are you out there, Donald? Listen to me. I will do this. Girl overwhelmed and gone crazy. So we'll get everything in there. And you never know. So this is something. But anyway, the new book, The Van Apfel Girls Are Gone, is a debut novel. And so she just came out with it. My goodness. Felicity McLean. And it was sold to Algonquin. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And I tell you, that is going to be a wonderful, wonderful book because Algonquin always picks the best. I mean, they really do. It's fantastic. And why I am telling you this, I want to remind everyone, at the convention, I discovered one thing very important to all you authors out there, all of you who dream of writing, or all of you who have written and don't know what to do now that you've written the book and you're thinking, should I go indie or should I look for an agent? Most of the authors I met at the convention agreed with me that you have to try both at some time in your life, probably. But if you can get an agent, getting an agent is one of the things that's really important. And the way that these writers, and I would say 80% of them, got an agent was just a simple, old-fashioned query letter. I know it is difficult. Over the next few months, again, I'm going to have agents in here to talk about this query letter. It is effective. And most of the authors got their agents not because they knew somebody, not because they had an in, not because they had a friend in the business. They got it through the old-fashioned way of sending a query letter. So it's very important. It's something that you have to think about. And I hope that over, as I said, the next few months, we will talk about the most effective query letters. Irene Goodman, on her website, irenegoodman.com, has there an entire story about how she looks at query letters. So this is a good place for you to start. And I will have some samples on my website, which is radio-joyonpaper.com. You need to find an agent, and if you just follow some simple procedure and get the query letter right, which is, as Barbara Powell says, and she's with the Irene Goodman Agency, the book, the hook, and the cook. Those are the three things that you need in a query letter. So we will be talking about that. But look at this here. Felicity McLean got it. And I don't know if she named her book The Van Apfel Girls Are Gone when she did her query letter. Perhaps. And maybe you have to use those words, girl and gone, in your query letter too. Everybody's going to be writing girl and gone books. Anyway, I'm looking forward to talking to them in not too distant a future so that we can get an idea of, wow, how you get an agent and all the things that an agent can do for you. And as I mentioned also, while I was at the convention, it was very heartwarming to see how important readers are to authors. I cannot emphasize enough that if you are an author, you must start getting an entire email list of everybody you meet, everybody who's interested in your book. And this is the best way to contact them and to stay in contact, because readers really do follow. I was amazed at how many people at BoucherCon, there were over 1,000 people there who were just readers, and they follow the authors that they love. So it's important that you make this contact with your readers. And I was so impressed with the authors. They spent so much time talking wherever you would go. If somebody would come, if an author would be standing somewhere and a reader came up to them, they would stop whatever they were doing, and they would talk, and they would share stories. And it was very heartwarming to see this interaction between the reader and the writer. So, again, this is something, you know, I've talked to people all the time, and one of the reasons I wanted Evelyn here today to talk about her book, Miracle in My Living Room, The Story of a Little Man, is that she has written the story, and it will touch your heart. And all of you, today, of course, is the anniversary of 9/11. I didn't bring in any of the people who have written books about 9/11 today because I think I would have gotten too emotional, as it was just listening to them reading the names. And this is one of the most beautiful things. I don't know if there's any other country or any other people who so honor people who have lost their lives, that every year there are thousands of people in New York who are reading and hearing the names of the people who were lost. It's such a moving day, and I was so just touched by it. And it reminded me to tell all of you, what is a memoir? A memoir is a story about something in your life. It does not have to be, it is not an autobiography. And for so many of you, you have stories in your family that are worth saving. And the only one who can save them is you. So your memoir might be about an aunt, an uncle, perhaps a day even, a day where you were, for example, in 9/11. Or it might be a week where you were stuck in a hurricane. Oh my gosh, I could do that one too. Last year, we didn't have electricity for 7 days, 14 hours and 11 minutes, something like that. It was pretty horrendous. Are you prepared this year, Evelyn?
I'm really concerned about the people in the Carolinas.
Oh, I am too. And I am so, you know, grateful that it's not coming to us. And we hope that we don't get one this year, because I feel like I just recovered from the one last year.
Yeah. Irma was incredible. We did lose power as well for several days.
Well, we lost power for over a week. We were one of the last buildings, for some reason, to get our electricity back on, which was really terrible because we have quite a few seniors in the building. We have, I think, two people who over 100 years old.
Wow.
And, of course, no elevators, no... And but the funniest thing, and this is a true story, there's a woman in our building she's 102 now, but she was 101 last year. And I was really worried about her. So I went upstairs and I said, you know, what can we do? I said, you know, the fire department will come. They'll take you down. Because we're not in an evacuation zone. Although we see the water, we're very high up. And she said, oh, no. She said, you know, my husband and I were in the military for 40 years. We lived everywhere. This is no problem for me. And so there she was, you know, at 101 years old, taking it better. I can tell you, taking it better than I did, because I would go down to the car and turn on the AC. But there she was, and she, you know, wow, she survived it. And so it's partly its attitude, too.
Sounds like she has a memoir she could write, too.
Exactly. And I told her the same thing. And so that's why I think it's so important for you, if you have a story, one of the beautiful ones, a memoir that I really treasure, is by Trish and Ray Arredondo. And it is called Maria's Journey. And it is a story of Ray's mother and what a beautiful woman she was. She came up from Mexico in order to make sure that she could support her family, and she worked here, and then eventually her family was brought here, and they worked so hard. And Trish and Ray have written this absolutely beautiful, and it's a wonderful example. If you want to do a story about your grandmother or great-grandmother or grandfather, this is a wonderful book as a sample of what you can accomplish. They did all that research. And, you know, it's wonderful when you have a family story to tell. If you have, you know, we have the records here in America. We have census. We have, you know, all the things from Ellis Island, all the now all this, you know, databases, and you can really make an amazing story of your family. But it's up to you to actually sit down and do it. And even for you, Evelyn, at one point you had to say, I'm going to sit down and write this story.
Well, it's interesting, Patsy. You were talking earlier about, you know, whether writing about a day or, you know, an autobiography is more of a, encompasses a person's whole life, whereas a memoir is a piece. It's a piece of that
exactly.
Life. So for me and my memoir, it actually covers 6 months of the time with my son in the hospital and before that. But you're right. I had to make the decision that I wanted to get this story out. And one of the amazing things about this book is my husband took detailed notes when we were going through the storm, so to speak, in that beginning period. And it wasn't until several years later that I decided to write the book. And I went back to my husband's notes. And he had written, in some cases, he had actually written the dialogue of conversations that we had with doctors. And I put that in the memoir. So his copious notes helped me to have the accuracy in my memoir that I wouldn't have had if I hadn't had his notes. So that was really wonderful.
And that's when you're writing a memoir, and as I said, it could be about a relative. In the case of the Arredondos, they wrote about Ray's mother. But they were so fortunate. They went to all the family members and said, what letters do you have? Let's have a look before they're lost, because this is important. You know, this family history is important, not just for your own family, but to encourage other people to look at their lives and to appreciate. You know, I'm sure Ray always loved his mother, but once he discovered the real story, how difficult her life was, there was that added appreciation. And so I hope that all of you will be inspired to just sit down. And it's funny, your husband took notes, and there's always somebody in the family who writes a diary or keeps something and keeps stuff. I mean, there are people who just keep. You keep the travel logs, or you keep your ticket stubs, you keep, you know, all of this stuff, and then you can pull it all together. So, and some of these you can work as a family. So, you know, you take it all together, and the one who's the best writer in the family can put it together and preserve it, and then your story might just inspire somebody. And that's the important thing. So in a minute, I'm going to come back, and I'm going to let Evelyn do the talking, because it's a very big story. I am now going to play one very special book buzz moment with our roaming correspondent, and she was roaming all over the Vinoy Hotel, Rita Moreau. She met a lot of people. She wore her shirt. I was a guest on Joy on Paper, and I really appreciated that. And she met a lot of authors, and one of the authors, of course, is Lori Roy, and we're going to do a special book buzz for her. Then we'll do commercials, and then I'm going to come back, and Evelyn is going to talk about her book for the rest of the show. Okay, take it away, Ed.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Lori Roy is a 2-time Edgar Allan Poe award-winning author. Her latest novel is The Disappearing. It's a doozy, but don't take it from me. Here's what Michael Connelly had to say after reading it. Lori Roy is one of the most elegant and enchanting writers to cross my path in a long, long time. I was transfixed by The Disappearing. A story of buried secrets rising to the light, it unfolds with a hypnotic grip that won't let you go until the last secrets are revealed on the final page. This is a deep, dark, and wonderful book. Wow! Fangirl that I am, that is impressive. Okay, here's the buzz. When Lane Fielding fled North Florida after high school for the anonymity of New York City, she never thought she'd return. But 20 years later, this time leaving behind her cheating husband, that's exactly what she and her two daughters have done. Now Lane is tending bar, living under her parents' roof on the historic Fielding Plantation, and planning how to escape the crimes of her father, crimes that date back to his role as the director of a local boys' reform school, a role that some claim turned sinister. Things do take a sinister turn when just 6 months after moving back to Florida, Lane's oldest daughter disappears. 10 days earlier, a Florida State student disappeared, and ever since, everyone has been keeping a close eye on the town's girls. But when Lane's younger daughter admits to having made an odd new friend, Lane must consider that her older daughter's disappearance is payback for her father's crimes, or perhaps for her own. So if Mr. Connolly was transfixed by The Disappearing by Lori Roy, it's probably a book that will keep you on the edge of your chair. Sounds like a winner to me. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more on my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my very, very special guest in the studio here, Evelyn Mann, the author of Miracle in My Living Room, The Story of a Little Man, and I'm going to talk to her in a few minutes. Again, I want to thank everybody who was involved in BoucherCon. I really enjoyed it. I want to thank everyone for the invitation and for the opportunity to meet so many authors while I was there. And then I have a big question. What am I going to do with the beautiful blouse I wore when Lee Child was hugging me? I might never wash it again. I don't know. It was pretty thrilling. Anyway, I am so happy now I'm going to turn to Evelyn, and I'm going to let her tell her story because it is a touching and beautiful story. So, Evelyn, where do you want to begin?
Well, actually, you know, one of the things in the previous segment, I just wanted to share with people who are writing, you were talking about they can pick up a story and either a day or a longer. It actually took me 4 years to write Miracle in My Living Room, The Story of a Little Man, because I had life happening outside of just writing. So it did take me, you know, quite a few years. And I say that as an encouragement, you know, to write a little bit, and keep going and just keep at it, and that it will come together. The I also had to write everything that happened. I had to get it all on paper. So it was around 80,000 words when I was done. So it was quite a bit, and I had some help getting it chopped down to around 40,000 words. But for me, the process of absolutely going day by day and getting it in a format that readers could read, it was a long process, but it was something I personally had to go through. I had to go through that process. And then once I was completed, then there was the opportunity to go, okay, we've got two scenes here that are alike, take one out, leave one.
Yeah, with that, by the way, that happens with the biggest, the most famous authors. I can't tell you how many of them have told me that they've written 110,000 words, and then their editor says, like, yeah, but we're only going to publish 80,000, so cut it. And it's hard. In the case of a famous author who once told me, well, yeah, but I liked every word. And he said, finally, he said, well, you know, in the end, I had to cut out scenes. And I kept telling myself every time I did it that, well, that's all right. I'll use it for the next book. I'll use it for the next book. So it is sometimes painful, but it is. When the story flows, or when you need to get these words on paper, that's the way to do it. You can always edit afterwards. So you don't have to. That's one of the things I, when I talk to writer, you know, groups of people who want to write, they'll say, oh, well, you know, it takes me so long. I write a page and then I rewrite it. Then I say, no, let it just flow. Write it, get it on paper. That's call the joy on paper. You get that joy of just having the words. It doesn't even matter, you know, if everything's in the right order. You might write out of order. You might write the end of the book in the beginning. But boy, oh boy, you feel that joy later on. It's the pain of editing, you know, is there. But in the end, you have the joy of somebody actually reading the book, right?
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to write Miracle in My Living Room, the story of a little man, was to inspire people to believe that miracles still happen. That's one of the heartbeats of the book. So just to give your listeners a little bit of the background. So my name is Evelyn Mann. I'm a mother of a special needs child. His name is Samuel Mann, and he has a rare form of dwarfism that's actually considered a lethal form of dwarfism. So the type of diagnosis he has is called thanatophoric dysplasia dwarfism. So thanatophoric in Greek means death-bringing. How discouraging to find out that while I was pregnant, that my son might had a lethal form of, well, we didn't know at the time when I was pregnant that it was dwarfism, but we knew that it was possibly three or four different diagnoses, all of them lethal except one, which was called osteogenesis imperfecta, which is brittle bone disease. Some of your listeners may have heard of it. That is survivable, but we didn't want to find out what type of diagnosis my son had before he was born. I didn't have an amniocentesis. I was being offered abortion several times, and actually I was being offered something called a therapeutic abortion, and I always thought that was a little odd. What, therapeutic for who? I wasn't really sure, but I understand that there was something wrong with my son and that he couldn't live past birth. But my husband and I made the choice that we wanted whatever time we were going to get with my son, whether it be 3 minutes, 3 hours, 3 weeks, 3 years, 30 years, whatever, you know, God made for that time to be. We wanted to give him as much of a chance as possible. So we chose to go ahead and have Samuel. And a couple weeks after he was born, that's when we found out that the type of diagnosis he has is called thanatophoric dysplasia. And at the time, now this is back in 2005. So number one, this is pre-Facebook. So to find out things about thanatophoric dysplasia, I did what any mom would do, and I was actually, the doctors told me not to do, was I went on the internet and I researched thanatophoric dysplasia, and I didn't find anything very positive, and I can see why they said not for me not to go search. But thanatophoric dysplasia. At that time, there was the doctors did find out there was a 7-year-old that had survived and lived to 7 in Japan, and a 3-year-old also in Japan. And that was it. That was it. That is all we knew at that time. And it was really hard as a mom to grasp that information. I had no one to reach out to. I had no one to go, hey, what do I do? What do I think? Is, you know, are there any resources out there? Can you put me in contact with doctors? What kind of out-of-the-box ideas can help my son survive? All that, I had none of that. And again, that is one of the reasons for writing Miracle in My Living Room, the story of a little man, to help those families find hope. And I think one of the heartbeats I had early on was, no pregnant woman should be without hope. There's always hope. It's not over until it's over. I mean, you have to, and as a mom, that's built in us, right? As
yes.
moms, you know, it's our job. It's our job to hope. And that shouldn't be taken away from any mom. So, you know, my son survived birth, and then 2 weeks later, he's still here. A month later, he's still here. And we're like, you have to do something.
Now, is this a genetic inherited?
It is actually a random genetic mutation. So it's not from my husband's side. It's not from my side of the family. It's just
random.
It's random. Yeah. And actually, I was talking to a mom, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And that mom didn't know, the doctors didn't tell her that what her child had was a random genetic mutation, and she thought it was something she did, but it wasn't. And it's fate.
It's fate. Sometimes these things just happen, and
yeah. And
then it's what we make of them, what we do with our lives. So many people, you know, you have something happen in your life, and your entire world changes in an instant, but it's what you do with it. It's how you continue, as in your case, as a mother, and for your husband, how you manage to find joy in little things. And we do mean a little.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I'm very proud of. So in this book, you do hear my voice, but you also hear my husband's voice, because I took a lot of the book from his notes. And what is beautiful to me is you see my husband's intensity and his can do. Let's search outside the box. One scene in the book that I absolutely love, my son had to be put on a ventilator. And so we spent a lot of time in the hospital. And there was the home ventilator sitting next to my son. They had him on the ventilator. And there was a manual hanging off the back of the ventilator. So my husband, while he's sitting there with my son, takes out the manual and starts reading it and starts going through it and learning everything about that ventilator. I mean, more than I know, he got to be that technical, he got to understand that technical side of having a child on a ventilator. But, you know, one of the things we had, people would come up to us in the hospital and say, you know, a lot of marriages don't make it when they have a special needs child. And my husband and I would look at each other, and we just, okay. We'd nod at the information. But so that's one of the reasons I'm so pleased that his voice comes through in the book, because it's beautiful that he's an example to other families.
Other husbands. Because I tell you, I do happen to know a family in where they had a special needs child. And in this case, the wife just walked away. The wife just walked away. The mother walked away. And the father is absolutely fantastic. He is so wonderful. He takes such good care of his child, changed his lifestyle, changed his job so that he could be working out of the house to take care of this child. And he is so devoted and so loving. And you're right. It's important that people understand that, you know, you can stay together. You can build on this love and find the joy, and not let it devastate you.
I know when my son came home from the hospital, there was some challenging times in the hospital, and there were some challenging times afterwards. And I know we were in the midst of the battle. But even back then, I had a really a sense that we would come out on the other side. And even back then, I knew I wanted to write this book. But we were still in the middle of it.
Yes.
We hadn't come out the other side. You know, you hear this thing about the test. You have a testimony. You have to have a test. Well, we had a test. And our testimony was still progressing. We hadn't come out the other side. And now we have. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to share this hope with other people that are going through their test. And there's always hope, and miracles still happen today.
Well, absolutely. And then this book covers the first 6 months.
That book covers the first 6 months.
And they were, what you guys went through, there was quite.
Yes. There was, it was the time of Terry Schiavo. I think you remember
yes,
that story
I do.
From that time. And so there was another child that had thanatophoric dysplasia that was born 6 months before my son. His name was Son Hudson. He was in Houston. He was also on a ventilator, but he sounded like he was doing better than my son. He was heavier. The more weight he had on him, I believe it gives you a better chance. And he was doing relatively well, but the hospital ethics committee decided that they needed to bring that particular child's case to court and determined that the hospital wanted the ventilator to be disconnected. And the case was taken to court. The judge said, you need to find a long-term care facility to take this child. And if we can't, the judge was going to agree with the hospital to disconnect the ventilator. And that's exactly what happened. They ended up disconnecting the ventilator. I heard this story. That was 6 months before my son was born. Then my son had the same diagnosis. And it was a frightening time. The whole time. And we did take my son to a long-term care facility for a very short period of time. And I write about that in my book and how scary it was. I mean, we tried to spend every night we could there. And the one night, my husband and I decided to go home and get some rest. Early in the morning, 3-4 in the morning, the phone rings. And it's a nurse from the long-term care facility. And he says to my husband, do you know your son turns blue? And my husband paused. Yes. And it's a respiratory, mainly a respiratory issue he has. So lack of oxygen will make you turn blue. And we're like, yes, that's why we need somebody there to actually be watching him all the time so that they can turn his oxygen up or manually bag him so he can get air. So those are the kind of things we went through. It's almost like a Lifetime movie. I mean, in a way that it's just incredible. One of the things they talk about in when you're writing fiction, you have to make your story not seem so incredible that people won't believe it. But with memoir, some of these things that happen really are incredible. And I write about that in there. Just the whole, it was surreal. It was absolutely surreal going into long-term care facility. And they didn't really have the resources to help my son the way he needed it. And we survived that. But that was probably the most challenging week of my life.
Now, after this 6 month period, tell us about what did you do? How did you accomplish so much with Samuel that people never thought could be done?
You know, when we came home, I was very, I guess that helicopter mom, you know what I mean? That one that just stays there, just looks at, we're not going anywhere, we're staying here. I mean, we were being transported to doctor's visits in an ambulance. But my husband and I took the care of my son, took it so seriously that we started doing everything that needed to be done. We had one paramedic tell us, well, you know, you really don't need us to transport you anymore. You guys are doing everything. I mean, we would give him oxygen, give him anything he needed. And we ended up, from that kind advice from this wonderful paramedic, we ended up getting our own van and started transporting him. But I didn't want to go anywhere. It was just for 3 years, literally just hunker down. And I would go to work. We had 24-hour nursing. And I would come back, how's my son doing? You know, and it was that whole thing. Well, at three, my son was nominated for Make-A-Wish. And Where should we go? They were talking about the Macy's Day Parade because he loves balloons. But we ended up going to Orlando to Give Kids the World. And we went for a week. Now, imagine, we haven't gone anywhere because I haven't let him go anywhere, really. And all of a sudden, we're in Orlando. We're in Disney theme parks. It was surreal in a beautiful, good way. And I'll never forget, there was this one picture. So we're at the park. There's a lake in front of us. We're deep inside Disney. And Samuel was sleeping in the stroller. And I was like, oh my gosh, what happened? What will happen if something happens? How is the ambulance going to find us here? And then I realized, but nothing's happening. He's sleeping. Everything's fine. It was like a moment of, I can breathe. And that was the beginning. Getting that Make-A-Wish, that was the beginning of opening a whole new world for my son, for him to travel. We went to Niagara Falls. We went to Prince Edward Island. We've done a lot of traveling with him. But before that, I was just petrified. And that just opened a whole new world.
Yeah, it's really what you have accomplished is amazing. And you have so many beautiful, beautiful photos on Facebook and videos.
Yes.
So tell people how they can find that.
Well, it's on Instagram. It's www.instagram.com/miracleman, and that's MANN, two N's, 17. And that's on Instagram. And A Miracle in My Living Room, just search for it in your search bar on Facebook.
So how did you get to ABC and Fox News?
Well, it was to promote the book. Uh-huh. It was to promote the memoir. So it's through my publisher, Her Purpose Press. And not only that, but last year Samuel was on the Learning Channel. So he's on Body Bazaar, and his story has been broadcast all over the world, from Russia to Australia. It's been amazing, and I'm getting emails from people from Turkey and Japan and Australia, just all over the world, wanting to know more about his story.
So there are 12 children with this problem today?
There are about 13, 14, somewhere in that range. There are survivors here in America, and the next to the U.S., the biggest country where there are survivors is Brazil. There are four or five survivors in Brazil.
And so you guys are all in contact?
We are all in contact. And anybody that is pregnant with a child with TD, if they search for me online, they find me. And I put them in contact not only with me, but with other families that have TD children. And
But you're helpful to all women who might have problems with...
I believe in that no pregnancy should be without hope, whatever the diagnosis. I just so firmly believe that in my heart, that nothing's impossible with God. So you can't discount. I know the diagnoses can look challenging, but you can't ever discount that. I wrote an article for Christian Broadcasting Network called Pray Believing, and I actually have a page on my web on Facebook called Pray Believing. And that's just any diagnosis or any challenging circumstance that you're going through. It's just a community of people that come together and pray, believing that nothing's impossible with God.
Well, I think that anybody who is faced with children who are not, you know, who have problems, whether it's autism, ADHD, dwarfism, whatever, sometimes outsiders don't understand the joy that the child can give, not just to their parents, but to the people that encounter them. We had in our family someone who had problems because of an injury. And yet, he was always joyful. The minute he would see a member of the family, his face would light up, and our faces would light up because we would be so happy around him. So... which is a lot, because there are sometimes you have relatives who don't make you smile at all. You're like, oh, please, you know. But then you have, I don't know what it is that they haven't faced maybe the problems of life, that they can still keep the joy in their life. And then that translates over to us.
What One of my favorite stories recently, and my husband and I took Samuel in. He was in the stroller, and we were in a grocery store. And Samuel must have smiled. And he has this brilliant smile that touches people. It touches people to the core. It is that joy you're speaking of. So we're checking out in the checkout counter, and this lady comes up to me, and she goes, I had to stop you, and I had to tell you, but your son smiled at me, and it touched my heart. And I had to come and tell you. And then her young son was with her, and we introduced both of them to Samuel. And that touches a mom's heart, that my son's smile can have that impact on people. Another lady said it so impacted her that all she could think about was my son one night, and she wrote me a letter that she wrote me an email that it made her think about her life. Like, where is she at in her life? What is she doing in her life? And Samuel just does it with a smile. Just touches people with a smile.
Well, the name of the book is Miracle in My Living Room. And Samuel is a miracle. And we all have to look for the miracles in our life and appreciate what we have when we have it. And then find the joy in life wherever we can. Whatever we can. And if we see somebody like Samuel, some people will say, oh, it's terrible. You know, he's got all these problems. Maybe he shouldn't be here. But then you see that smile and you say, oh, yeah, oh, that smile lights up a room. It lights up the world.
He was on a program called Special Needs by Special Books by Special Kids. And that video got over 2 million hits.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, because they saw the same joy that we did.
Exactly. Now, you're also featured in a new book. Tell us
about
that.
Yes, absolutely. There's this book called Too Blessed to Be Stressed for Moms, written by Deborah Cody. I'm in chapter 15, and it's Mamas in the Trenches is the name of the chapter, and it's called Mom Courage. And so she shares our story with her readers. Again, it's Too Blessed to Be Stressed for Moms by Deborah Cody.
Okay, well, I'm going to invite Deborah on the program so we can talk about, we'll talk again about Samuel Mann, and the last name is M-A-N-N, so that was that's, you know, fantastic. It's easy to remember. And Evelyn has done a brilliant job, and your husband's name?
Is Ralph, yeah.
Ralph. And Ralph, really, Ralph, you are amazing. And you should be so, so proud of yourself. And it is just what you have done. And you and Evelyn together have really created a miracle in your living room. And I think around the world with every heart that you touch. And I hope that everyone will go. You can go to wherever books are sold, Barnes & Noble and Amazon.
Yep. Also, www.miraclemand.com. Not only can you buy the book there, but there are color pictures in the back of the book when you purchase from our website.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that's great. Yes, go to
www.miracleman.com.
Miracleman.com, man with two N's, and go there and get this book. It just will move your heart, and it will make you just take for a moment time to appreciate how wonderful life is and can be, but it all comes from what you make of it. If you are going to let problems just throw you for a loop and that you're sort of paralyze you, you're not going to do yourself any good and you're not going to do the world any good. But
And there was a time I was actually paralyzed. I write about that in the book too. And there is that time. And then, God gave me peace and we moved on.
It happens. You have something in your life, a difficulty in your life, and you do feel like you're paralyzed, that you can't do it, you can't. And then hopefully something will touch you, and it might be something as lovely as this book. So get this book and just appreciate joy. Right?
Absolutely. Every day. Every day.
Every day. Well, I want to thank Evelyn so much for coming in today, because, as I said, today is... It's so hard to believe that 9/11, it's been so many years, 17 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And they were talking today about the youngest child to die was on that plane. the one that they crashed they crashed into the field. Mm-hmm. She was 3 years old. She'd be 20 today.
Oh wow!
So can you imagine, for her family, what a tragedy that was, and that's why we have to always try to grab every minute of joy that we can in our lives.
I write about that in my blog. I have a blog as well, and I just share.
Oh yeah, tell us about how to see your blog.
It's on miracleman.com. It's on the blog. But I share one of my favorite. I have several favorite blogs, but one of them is just basically smelling the roses. I mean, how many times do we pass? I know it's cliche, but how many times do you pass a rose and you don't smell it?
Exactly.
And to stop and smell it, and to stop and realize my son is looking up, smiling at me, and just literally put everything else aside and just enjoy that beautiful moment, and it just fills your heart.
Well, again, Evelyn Mann, thank you for coming in today to Joy on Paper. It's been a joy for me. And I want, again, to remind everybody that really one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And remember, it's up to you. You can do it. After this convention at BoucherCon, I am more and more convinced that there are so many of you who have a book in you. And it's just so much fun when you see authors at an event like this, and they are all, you can see the joy on their face that they have people who are reading their books, and they're so proud of themselves, and they're so happy. And so you can do it too. And please go to my website, which is radio-joyonpaper.com, but go to my Facebook and like me on Facebook. It's Radio Joy on Paper. There's no dash in that. I couldn't get a dash in the Facebook thing, so it's Radio Joy on Paper. And I would really, really appreciate if you would go there and like my page. And while you're there, I'm going to be putting up some, I will be putting up a lot of the interviews that I got while I was at BoucherCon, and that some of the photos, because I, as I said, I got hugged by a lot. Now, I don't know if this is, you know, I will admit that the ones I wanted to get hugged by the most were all the guys. You know, Lee Child is tall. He is 6'5", and, you know, I look so tiny. It's so funny. Do you know, he got back the Jack Reacher books. He got them back from Tom Cruise. So he sold initially to Tom Cruise. And of course, Tom Cruise is 5'7" and not at all the hero of Lee Child's book. Jack Reacher in the books looks like Lee Child, 6'5", blonde, blue-eyed, and as he mentioned to me, very handsome. So he has taken the Jack Reacher series back, and he's going to be doing it as a streaming video. And so he's looking for an actor to play him. So it was fun to get all of the stories from Lee while I was there and get to meet him. And I'm never going to wash that shirt. I'm just going to hang it up. So anyway, I want to again thank everybody for joining me today on Joy on Paper. And mostly I want to thank Big Ed in the control room, who's always so good to me. And he salutes me and I salute him. And everybody have a great day. And just find the joy, as Evelyn has found the joy and Ralph has found the joy. Find the joy in life and be good to somebody and say something nice to somebody today. Bye-bye now.